I'm Lodging Editor Kate Hughes. Thank you for tuning in to Lodging on Demand. This episode examines what hoteliers can do to cut costs during the COVID-19 crisis.
So during this unprecedented time, hotels are doing anything they can to cut costs. Today we're talking with Wayne West III, president of Newport Hospitality Group and chair of the IHG Owners Association, Brad Rahinsky, president and CEO of Hotel Equities, and Bob Roche, chairman and CEO of RAR Hospitality, about steps hoteliers can take to save money during the COVID-19 crisis. Hotels are looking to cut costs any way they can right now. At what point should owners start looking at cost-cutting measures? Bob, why don't you start?
Well, I'll start. I say you start immediately after you meet with your employees and tell them, we're in this together. We're going to take care of you. And in our case, what we did is we furloughed quite a few employees immediately. This is back on March 13th. But we agreed to pay their insurance. And at the time, I gave them an estimate of April 30. Don't know where I got that date. I kind of was tracking how South Korea and Italy were doing. Just be prepared for April 30. I don't know if it'll be sooner or later. And we started cutting right away after furloughing employees. We looked at how much reservation activity there was and decided we did not need any line employees. And so we have been going with department heads only, senior department head only, since that time. So that was the first cost cutting. Again, meeting with the employees first, getting them to understand the depth of this problem and tackling it. Now, we did a lot of other types of cutting as well, but I thought I'd end with that for now.
Brad, how about you?
Yeah, Kate, I would absolutely echo what Bob just described. You cannot over communicate during this time with your team. And if you're going to make a mistake, you want to err on the side of over-communicating and making sure that you're being as transparent as possible, particularly with the folks that unfortunately had to be furloughed. One of the first things we did as an organization is senior leadership took a significant cut across the board in their comp to lead during this time, to let everybody know that we're with them. And as Bob mentioned, what in some cases used to be a weekly exercise is now a daily, or in some cases multiple times a day, to ensure that you're being a good steward with the minimized revenue that's coming in, and effectively doing everything you can do to put cost controls in place. There is a point, obviously, where there is no more to give, and you're running as lean as possible in all areas of operations. And in some ways, Kate, at some point it becomes a math problem to some degree for owners to decide whether or not it makes sense to suspend operations or keep the facilities running. And then there's always the people component part of the equation to consider. But there's more to that, Kate, than just the math. It's not as simple as many would think to shutter or suspend operations in a building. So it's important that everybody understands the comprehensive lens that needs to be looked at when they're making those determinations.
Right. I want to ask Wayne what he thinks as well, but I want to come back to what it takes to shut down a building. So Wayne, at what point should owners start looking at cost-cutting measures?
Well, you know, I'll agree with the other two gentlemen. We've certainly slimmed down our operations to right-size the operations to the levels of business we've had. We've had some successes out there, not only with right-sizing the payrolls. Unfortunately, the first people to get hurt are the hourly staff, and they have. You know, our desire is that, you know, as business levels return, our plan is to ramp that up back as quickly as possible to get these folks back working again, because they're not working for us for fun. They're working for us because they need to feed their families and need to take care of their personal lives. So we're looking forward to the day we bring those thousands, hundreds of thousands of folks back on. I think we need to look at the other things that we can do, whether it's, you know, we haven't had to close any hotels yet. We've certainly closed buildings. You know, we've closed floors. We've talked to utility companies. We've talked to providers of cable, see how they can help us decrease some of the fixed costs. So I think we've looked at all those, and I'm sure everybody on this call and most of our operators out there that have been smart about it have done those things too. You know, we've looked at the things that we can cut that don't affect safety. They don't affect the cleanliness. I think the few travelers that are out there are going to be super sensitive to anything that we do today to make sure they see a heightened sense of awareness to safety and cleanliness. So those are a couple of things that we just got to make sure that we're super focused on and make sure that the guest is aware that we're doing everything we can to make sure their stay is safe.
Let's go back to how you can cut costs in your building not related to people. So, Brad, I think you touched on this. Let's start with you.
Yeah, when you say not related to people, Kate, I think Wayne was starting to go down that path a bit. You know, this is a time where we're all in this together. We've reached out to our lenders. We've reached out to our vendors. We've reached out to other groups where we have both fixed and variable costs to let them know of our situation and to ask for some assistance here, in some cases a deferment. In some cases, some grace. And I can tell you, it's been encouraging across the board where it is not often, but always been met with a positive response on how they can assist. And that speaks highly to the relationship part of our business. And I think everybody understands where everybody else is and how they're being impacted here. So it's been encouraging to see the support and the help that we're giving to one another in this area.
Bob, do you have anything to add there? Is there any places that hoteliers should be looking to trim costs back?
We look at it every day. We talk to our landscaper and our trash haulers and cut back that service quite a bit. We also asked all of our vendors to help us by reducing their costs for a period of time and also deferring some payments, because cash is so critical right now. As I'm sure Brad and Wayne know, CMBS loans are very difficult to work out. So we're paying either interest or interest in principal to this day to avoid defaulting on a loan. And as we try to work out with our lenders, we've tried to work with our franchise companies, but they kind of decide what they want to cut for us. This is what we're willing to do for you. They don't normally respond. And we frankly talked to the city. We're trying to get transient occupancy tax deferred with not much luck, to be candid. So you just keep on trying things. You know, cost of guest acquisition is something we really can't cut yet because we're reliant on any source of business right now just to get to a place where we can even come close to breaking even. We're nowhere near there now.
What about on the other side of things? Are there areas where hoteliers should not be looking to cut that would negatively impact business in the long run? Wayne, what do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think we've got to be careful that the guests that are staying with us, you know, I mentioned the life safety issues. I think there are also opportunities that the guests that are with us, what are they looking for? They're looking for, you know, they're looking for a food option. We've had some success lately, especially in our high-end select service, our Hilton Garden Inns, our extended stay properties with IHC, where we've enhanced some of our offerings in food and beverage, where they can go in and buy something as simple as TV dinners and frozen products, fresh fruits, fresh vegetables in those offerings. So when the guest does come in, they do have something that they don't have to go out to the grocery store and get it because even the offerings in the grocery store are limited. So we've tried to be thoughtful about what we can provide as offerings. There again, I think you have to be careful about anything life safety. I think you have to be careful about anything that will be a perception of the guests that they don't want to stay there. From the guest acquisition standpoint you just mentioned, it's so critical. You get the guests there and they you don't want them to walk out the door. You want them to stay. You want them to feel comfortable. I think the one other spot that no one's mentioned from a cost-saving standpoint that we think we're going to have some lock-in is your workers' comp. You know, our payrolls have been reduced 50-75%. And if you can reach out to your workers' comp coverage and see if they can reset that for you, that's certainly, from a cash standpoint, if this thing lasts 90 more days, there's going to be a re-evaluation of your payrolls and your workers' comp plan. So I think that is certainly a cost-saving factor that we've began some discussions with our carriers and seem to have success with as well.
Brad, can you think of any places where cost cutting could possibly go too far?
Yeah, I could completely agree that life safety is a non-negotiable, and that's got to be maintained regardless of the continued erosion that we're experiencing in revenues. Another area that I think it's important for owner-operators to consider is that what you don't want to happen is when we come out of this and start to find some stability and a slowdown of the erosion, that you come back to a sick asset or a physical limitations to your building. Things such as your HVAC and making sure that you're keeping your electricals operating effectively so that, once again, when we do start to come swinging out of this, the building is ready to go and you're plugging in your staff appropriately and accordingly, and you're ready for business.
Bob, anything you want to add?
Well, I mean, my no cut is strong GM, what I call A players, your absolutely core best players. You want to do everything you can to protect them, and maybe a certain amount of high touch for the guests, because each of these guests also are very unique today. I mean, I talk to every one of our guests at all our hotels, and I want to know why they're there. And I just want to keep them happy. So they need to feel a connection, because they're almost pretty much self-quarantined in a hotel room for 30 to 45 days in our extended stay hotels. So high touch.
The interesting thing to me is that so much of the discussion I've seen from the industry is, what are you doing as you're shutting your hotels down? But you bring up a good point, which is there are hotels that do have occupancy. There are extended stay properties. There are places that soon will be accommodating hospital workers, or maybe even hospital patients, as the industry pivots. How can owners be aware of those opportunities and not kind of shoot themselves in the foot? They might cut so much that they're not able to spring into action.
Yeah, I mean, I think customer service, you don't ever want to lose what a good hotelier wants as their motto. I mean, it has to be great customer service. And sanitation is another area where I think the guest expectation is particularly high right now. So if you keep good customer service and a really clean operation, and you keep your top employees, I think you're okay. I mean, and when I say keep top employees, even if you have to furlough them, if you meet with them, I've got my absolute top cook in the organization. Now, I gave him one shift, but I met with him personally and I said, hey, you are special to us. You're the only line employee that we've retained. I just want to let you know how important you are to us. Now, it doesn't give him a lot of money right now. He can still collect unemployment. He knows that he's treasured, and he feels, you know, any time a CEO can walk up to a line employee and say, I think you're great, but I think there's something there. So I think those things are important.
Wayne, what do you think?
You know, I think it's a hotel by hotel basis. I think your question related around what can we do to be prepared and what can we do to get through the situation. I think from a preparation standpoint, you know, we do need to keep the hotels as lively and as customer ready as we can. I think what I see in some of our hotels today is that the relationships that our great general managers have built, Bob, you said your A players out there, your AGMs, which we've tried to retain as many of our A players or more senior players and more talented and skilled players, have done a great job of reaching out into their local communities, the local politicians, the local healthcare workers, to keep their hotels as top of mind as possible. I think they've done a great job of doing that. So they are ready when either, to use Kate your word, when the economy pivots, or a specific segment pivots and they do need to start traveling again. So I think we keep talking to our folks, our salespeople, our general managers at the properties to keep reaching out to the local community and seeing what's available and how they can help them, how they can be receptive to any wants, needs, and desires that the community has. You know, the business is going to turn around and we're going to need to be ready. And there's certain segments that may pop first. And we need to be thoughtful of what that is. We need to be ready to bring our associates back. We need to be, you know, I think the recovery stage of this is our next critical plan, right? Who do we bring back first, and how do we get our folks kind of retrained and re-ready for what the new normal looks like, whether it's cleanliness or whether it's sales and marketing or whether it's the e-commerce faction of making sure that whatever the guest looks like and whatever his wants, needs, and desires are, we're ready to fulfill that. I think that's really, really crucial that my team is working on and being there again, thinking about and being prepared for, so we get our teams ready for it. So when that does happen, and it will, it's going to look different. It's going to be different. But when it does happen, that we're ready to execute on it.
That's an interesting point I want to go a little further into, because I feel like some hoteliers might get a little overzealous and start cutting to the point where it'll work against them when it is time to come back. How can a hotelier make sure they're not going too far? Bob, you want to start?
Well, I don't think we go too far as long as we talk to every employee. For instance, we furloughed all line employees, but we also met personally with each employee and discussed their PTO, discussed how they could get through this. Was there anything we could help them with? We gave them some suggestions for temporary employment if that was more important to them. So, you know, working with those employees, I think, was critical.
Is there anything we didn't touch on that you're thinking, oh, this is something we really should discuss?
Yeah, Kate, I would I agree with Wayne's earlier comment. This is not a one size fits all approach. That would be a mistake. To your point, Kate, we have some properties that are still running in the 30, 40s, and even low 50% occupancy. Some of our extended stay properties that are taking in business that is related to the crisis. And while those are the anomalies at this point, are outliers, the majority of our portfolio is certainly below those thresholds. You can't just apply a one-size-fits-all approach. That would be a mistake. Today, as we're speaking here on April 3rd, our portfolio of roughly 140 hotels, we've only had one closure, and that was really driven by the municipality. If it wasn't for that decision by the municipality, we would have no closures to this point because of the way that we effectively lock down costs, the way that we continue to push for revenue. And even though obviously the revenue in some cases has decreased by 90%, 92-93%, what that requires, the onus goes back to the operator to ensure that we're shifting share from the competitors as best as possible in the right way, and just making sure that we're once again really locking down and controlling those costs. But the ability to be ready for all of those properties where we've taken, in some cases, a hatchet and in some cases a scalpel to the staffing model based off of their specific situation, the ability to get back in, plug in, and get those team members back, activated, engaged, and doing what they were doing back in February is incumbent upon the operator, the ownership group, and the management company. That's keeping in close touch with those folks, with, once again, over-communicating to them with what's going on at their properties, making sure that they still feel valued, allowing them to still be part of the communication thread so that they feel engaged with what's going on, and providing them a voice so that they can express what's going on with their world, so that you have a better handle and idea on whether or not, when you do open the doors back up fully, if they're going to be one of the folks that's going to be coming back your way, or if they've gone to a different opportunity that was able to support them during this time.
My last question for you guys has to do with what else hoteliers could do beyond cutting to stay solvent during this crisis. Is there anything at all that we haven't discussed that hoteliers should be considering or implementing at their properties right now? Bob, do you want to start?
Sure. I mean, I think stimulating new demand is absolutely critical right now. So we know that the healthcare sector is a good one. It is something that is tricky, though. So do we want sick patients at our hotels? Not unless it was closed, and that is the only way to generate revenue. So if we can get healthcare workers who are either on forced quarantine because of the possibility that they were exposed to COVID-19, or if the hospital just wants to keep them close by, we have hotels that are very close to hospitals, and that's another area. And right now we're scouring new demand opportunities. So the last thing we want to do is cut a really good salesperson. So if we do have to cut a salesperson at a certain hotel, I'll bring that salesperson to another hotel and help them stimulate demand there. That's something that, to me, is critical. And then, of course, having relationships in the market, whether it's with your local tourism authority or all of the major demand generators, if you're not the first or top of mind hotel, you're going to be lagging behind at single digits when there are hotels starting to creep up to 30 and 40%, which will get them out of the cash flow crater that we're in right now.
Oh, I think you're absolutely right. I think being prepared, I think, you know, whether it's healthcare, whether it's military, we've seen a little movement in interest in some of the government sector, primarily military. We have hotels, it seems quite a few around military bases that may start moving some military people around. We think that's an opportunity. But to your point, Bob, I think being prepared for whatever segment turns first or whatever segment pops, and whether it's healthcare. And I think we've also struggled with the idea of what do you want to align yourself with a hospital that may put infected patients with you? Probably not today unless we close that hotel. There again, that's an ownership by ownership decision, but we haven't advised in that direction yet. I think you continue to be creative. We've signed up for every single bid project out there. Construction seems to be ongoing. If you travel up and down the roads at all or look at some of our business in our extended stay, that seems to be a segment of the traveling public that is continuing. So we've had some success in that in the last 4 weeks, and that continues. But I just think we need to be ready. We need to take care of our associates as best we can today. And I loved your comment about continuing to talk to them and make sure we're as engaged with them as we can be. Whether that's with the GMs, the properties, or even our hourly employees, I think that's critical right now.
And Brad, why don't you help us wrap it up?
Sure, Kate. I think that there is a once-in-a-generation opportunity here as we come out of this to attract and procure talent to our industry like never before. I've seen so many CVs, resumes, and paper come my way in the past 10, 20, 30 days. That is incredibly impressive. That would have never been pushed my way if not for this event. And I think one of our ethos is hire an attitude and teach them the business. I think there's an opportunity for all of us to take a look at folks who maybe historically would have never looked at coming into the hospitality space, who are incredibly talented and gifted. And we have an opportunity to attract that level of individual at this moment, bring them into what I believe to be the greatest industry there is, teach them our business and apply their business acumen and their skill set, which would really elevate the entire space, the entire industry. So we're looking for those opportunities. We're getting engaged with those folks now, letting them know where we are, trying to create a timeline, a roadmap for those individuals and how we can bring in their talent into our organization so that once again, when we do start to get some stability around here, that we can come out of this thing swinging, loaded for bear and ready to take the next step.
I'd like to ask Brad and Wayne what they think of one quick comment, and that is if we were able to continue to use these management people on the front lines, does it make sense for us to become a more flat organization?
Since 2008 and 2009, and maybe the 10 years before that, we go through these cycles, right, where we have to right-size our business. And You know, the best GMs I've ever worked with in my whole life were the ones that stood in front of the desk at 7 or 8 in the morning and found a reason not to be in their offices at 7 or 8 in the morning, but were shaking hands and pouring coffee and thanking their guests for their business. And the best GM I ever worked for, I don't know if you happen to know a gentleman by the name of Jim Gross, but he's on the West Coast somewhere now, but just a great guy. And he would always beat me down. If I was a VP of ops and I was traveling, he would always beat me downstairs, and that's where he would be. And if we can figure out a way to find those A general managers that want to be there and push them out where at 7 or 8 in the morning, they're down there, and we're at 4 or 5 in the afternoon, they're down there, and they find a way to induce their other management team to spend some time doing that. If you're talking about flattening the bell curve and getting them down there instead of the piles of paperwork or sitting in front of their computers and finding a reason to be in their offices, yes. And if we kind of finally make a way for technology to make us more efficient and allows them to do that, yes. And it makes us more money in the end, yes.
And Bob, this is Brad. I think I understand your question, but is that what you were referring to when you mentioned flattening the business?
Yes. In other words, bringing the GM out into the lobby after the restaurant and stop this paperwork thing and maybe cut out some middle management going forward.
Yeah, and no question. I think Wayne said it was right on the money that we believe that while part of the role, certainly there is an administrative piece and there is a report piece, but at the end of the day, we're still in the customer service business and about taking care of those folks. We believe in a high touch approach, and we mandate that our GMs and directors of sales and property leaders are out in the lobbies during that breakfast time where we have the best opportunities to engage with the customer, with the guests. We also have things such as a sales call requirement for the general manager. Have to make at least 10 calls a week with their DOSs to get out in the field, make sure they understand who's driving the business into their hotels, and ensuring that those groups understand how we value and appreciate their business. So I think it, you know, as we continue to get more automated and more reports are required of us as owner operators, I think it's incumbent upon us to see how we can take much of that off of our property level leaders' plate so that they can be as engaged as possible with our guests as often as possible.
Now I have one more question, because now I'm curious. Do you think that this crisis is going to fundamentally change the way you guys do business?
We have had deep discussions about what our own property teams will look like when we bring them back and what kind of fundamental changes our staffing models would look like. And Brad, I think you made the comment about bringing different skill sets back in and some of the resumes you've looked at. I think that's very perceptive, because I haven't thought about bringing different disciplines from outside the industry in, but that now that you've given me that thought, that's great. We've certainly talked a great deal about, you know, we had staffing models that were traditional staffing models. And, you know, I've talked to my general managers and my leadership at my corporate office about, you know, this is an opportunity to rebuild these teams. We rebuild them kind of in the new world. So we're going to do that. I've certainly looked internally at my corporate office. We've made a couple changes here. And unfortunately, I've furloughed a couple people and I've let a couple people go that we may not bring back in the same structure. And I'm going to redo my sales and marketing team perhaps, or, you know, recraft and retool and reorganize it to probably better adapt it to what the new norm will be. So it gives me an opportunity to do that at my corporate level as well as at each individual property. So yeah, Kate, I think that's exactly right. The model may be a little bit different for us at the property level as well as my corporate environment.
Bob, you want to weigh in?
Well, all I've got to say is that about 40 years ago, Embassy Suites, and actually I think it even started before Embassy Suites, when it was Granada Royale. I was the general manager there. We used to put a desk in the lobby, and it didn't have all the paperwork that the GM had in the back office, but it was a desk that the GM used during breakfast and happy hour. And it put the GM literally in the lobby. And that, to me, is flattening the organization well, where you get the GM talking to every single guest. And the GM and the line employees, the team members that are not minimum wage necessarily, but literally there as front desk agents, perhaps, are at the same level. Everybody's in the lobby. And that, to me, is the new way to take care of guests. I think we're going to come out of this with less middle management and a flatter organization touching every guest.
I think they nailed it, Kate. I would just say that there's evolutionary change and advancement, and then there's revolutionary change and advancement. And I think this type of crisis really drives and creates revolutionary type of thinking around what we do as an industry, as an organization, as a property, and you can continue to go down the path there. And I think many of those things will absolutely create a paradigm shift in the way that we evaluate and think about the business. The essence of what we do will not change if you're doing that right. If you were doing it right a year ago, a month ago, today, that part of it will remain the same. That's creating a tremendous and wonderful experience for our guests to ensure that they feel valued and welcomed and want to come back to our facilities. But the way that we do that, the way that we implement and go after the business, the way that we take care of our associate family, the way that we attract and acquire new businesses, and the way that, as I mentioned earlier, that we're going to be bringing in new talent, different ways of thinking, folks who come from different space to help us ask the what ifs and how abouts at our business, I think could potentially create a transformational change, profound change in the way that we do business going forward.
Thank you for listening to Lodging on Demand. If you want more content like this, please subscribe to our channel. Or you can listen to Lodging on Demand as a podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify.